Afternoon Drive.
Afternoon Drive with John Matham on Cape Talk.
It is 12 minutes now to 6 o'clock. Those who have listened regularly to the program over the 21 years that we've been broadcasting will know that I'm not a lover of royalty, generally. I do acknowledge that the British royals, most of them work very hard and quite thanklessly, but I hate the idea of inherited privilege generally. So a bit like Rian Milan, perhaps for slightly different reasons, I was completely taken aback by how much I enjoyed Graham Viney's book, The Last Hurrah, South Africa and the Royal Tour of 1947. Graham, welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
People who know the name Graham Viney know it in association with the design world.
Yeah.
And I didn't know until I picked up this book that you also read in international relations at Oriel College at Oxford. And in a way, this book brings together your international relations
yeah,
part of you and the design part of
yeah,
you. So it's a perfect mix. What made you want to write it?
YouTube, in a word. I was watching something 2.5 years ago, and you know how the little things pop up on the side, and there was the royal family arriving in Table Bay. I thought, God, what is that? Watched it, and then I became interested, and then it sort of took me over.
It literally started from that. It was not something in which you'd had any prior interest.
No, I mean, it came briefly into my first book on colonial houses, because the present queen had her 21st birthday at Government House. But, I mean, that was a sort of nanosecond. And no, I knew very little about it, except that, of course, I'd heard my parents and grandparents from time to time talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, we've had programs where the royal visit has come up, and we've had people phone calling us, and you describe it in the book, the school children who were on Signal Hill as
yes,
part of the welcome when the battleship
yes,
sailed in.
Yes. You know what? Since I've written this book, people come up to me wherever I go, and they've always got a story about how they or their parents or grandparents somehow interfaced with the royal family. I mean, the tour was designed so that by the end of it, they reckon between 60 to 70% of a pretty sparsely populated country had either seen or actually managed to talk to.
It is extraordinary that it had that reach.
Yes. And that is really a sort of a modern version of the Elizabethan royal progress that they would, you know, set off through the country so that the ordinary people could see them come by.
And unfortunately, a lot of those reminiscences can't be true because know from documentary evidence that the royal party was somewhere else completely
on
that day.
It's very, very strange, but a lot of people, you know, imagine something. And someone did explain to me on this very issue that your memory is the last time you thought about something, so it can play you false.
But there is the most extraordinary detail in this book about where they went, what they saw, what the flower decorations were,
yeah,
what they were wearing, the extraordinary white train in which they traveled across South Africa and through Southern Rhodesia, as it was then Zimbabwe. But I presume the documentary record about this is voluminous.
Yes. Well, when I started, I thought I was going to be quite hard up for material. As you delve, you find more. And, of course, the railways, who were in charge of the white train, which is, and that part of the tour, do have very good documents still surviving in their museum, which is marvelous.
Because it was a statement of South African manufacturing ability.
The whole tour showcased South Africa. I mean, sometimes it was a two-edged sword, of course, because people would, I've actually mentioned, a photograph of, say, a township in South Africa. You know, the Smuts government thought that showed South Africa up well compared to the well-known slums of Mexico City and Delhi. Of course, people who were against South Africa said, well, there we are, that's what happened with segregation. So, the same photograph was often shown to supply the same.
I think one of the extraordinary successes of this book is the way that it It combines human storytelling, all of the characters, the characters associated with Smuts, the characters associated with D.F. Malan, who next year would take over in the election, which Smuts might have won if he'd called an early election immediately after the royals. He might have won it, but he'd made an agreement with Malan that he wouldn't capitalize by doing that.
And so, he was honorable in that way.
So all of these people and the people that they meet in the towns and villages and railway sidings where they stop, and to have running alongside that the parallel track of how this was important in terms of empire and Commonwealth and what was happening politically in South Africa.
Yes. I mean, Smuts wanted the South Africans to see a constitutional monarchy working and to see the advantages of being part of the Commonwealth. After all, he only just managed to get the country into the Second World War, but in 43 he got a very overwhelming majority. He was supported right across the board, and he thought that this would carry him through. And it might have done, as you said, if he'd called a snap election. Malan was very clever. He saw that the Tour had worked against him, that even Afrikaners, and I'm not talking about the Blutsap Afrikaners who supported Smuts, but some of the others had been rather taken by this. And, of course, he held up the race card most
The anecdotes, I mean, the wonderful anecdotes that are in here, the king without his stammer, after having, you know, becoming aware of just how divided and fractious South Africa could be at times, sort of looking at the motto, Unitate ex viris, out of unity comes strength, and saying there's not much bloody unitate here, is there? Those wonderful anecdotes, were they easy to find?
Well, you know, you get odd things, interviews with ex-courtiers, you scratch around. I was very lucky to find letters, both from Lady Harlech, the Queen's lady-in-waiting, but she had been wife of the High Commissioner here, so she knew South Africa well. And, of course, Lassels, who was the private secretary, and Eminence Grise. Now, both of them didn't keep diaries here. They wrote every 3 days to their spouses, so those were a great record.
I mean, D.F. Malan didn't want the Tour to take place, but they'd said they would show the King and Queen respect the way Afrikaners do. But and then there was a divide amongst the Afrikaners, as there was amongst black people. They were royally fated in KwaZulu-Natal because of the sort of royal elements there. But you know, there were boycotts planned by the Indian Congress and by the ANC. Those didn't eventuate. There were a lot of black people that really did welcome them. There were some Afrikaners living near railway lines that kept the curtains closed permanently so nobody could see the white train going past. So
that is what happens. And of course, you know, there's no doubt about it that politicians often feed ideas into the electorate. And in this case, the electorate was pretty resistant to taking on this sort of, you know, borrowed judgment. They wanted to be part of it. I mean, you know, if you live in the middle of nowhere, seeing this thing come by, seeing these sort of nice-looking family, you sort of want to go with it. Do you know what I mean? You don't want to let it pass you by.
One of my favorite stories, and there are many that come into contention, is the time when they were in Grahamstown and the king had one of his temper tantrums, apparently known in the family as his gnashes. And Queen Elizabeth told him that a long walk would do him good, so he set off, shadowed by two detectives, and he went up a winding, unmade road, and he reached the silent summit of this lonely location with Eastern Province bush stretching out as far as the horizon on the plains below, and he was amazed to see a lone Boer farmer standing by the side of the road. "Goeiemôre," said the king, practicing his Afrikaans and politely doffing his hat. He received an ungracious grunt in reply. "What are you doing here?" persisted the king. "No man's," replied Mr. Radermeyer in his thick accent. "I've been standing here a long time. My wife and daughters have gone to Grahamstown to see the bloody royal family, but they said if I wait here, I might see them go past." "Well, how do you do?" said the stranger, extending his hand. "I am the king." And a few minutes of man-to-man conversation ensued. That is such a gorgeous story. I'm sort of tempted to ask you, did that really happen?
Yes, and it's reported, and then I actually found, of course, variation reports in the newspapers, the Eastern Cape newspapers. Mrs. Radermeyer and her daughters came back, obviously couldn't believe their ears, but the story spread Of course, these stories get embellished. You've got to be careful. Mm. But, I mean, substantially it stands.
But the King and the Queen and the two royal princesses, Elizabeth and Margaret, worked incredibly hard on this trip.
Very, very hard. You can only admire the stamina. There's the famous thing when Smuts remarked to Princess Alice on the stamina of the royal family, and she replied crisply, "They have to have it, otherwise they wouldn't last the course."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And in your final chapter, one of the questions you ask was the tour a success? And I suppose depending on where you stand politically, you could argue that, yes, it was a resounding success, it was mixed success, or no, in terms of achieving a closer relationship between South Africa and the empire, it didn't succeed at all.
Well, that is because Milan knew that to separate South Africa from the empire, he needed to hold the race card. And, of course, the empire was becoming a multiracial body, no longer just a white-run entity. And so it's played Milan's way, really. Nevertheless, the republic in this country, 1960, was won by a very slim majority, and only after the coloureds had been removed from the voters' roll. So it didn't play quite in the way that the nationalists hoped.
Mm. Was this written for yourself, for a South African audience, for an English audience? I don't know whether British people would read it differently from South African people.
Yeah, well, it's quite interesting because the people I've sent it to, English and even American, have really enjoyed it. It has been taken by an English and international publisher, so we'll see. I think for South Africans, it is very interesting to see that moment in time and what perhaps might have been.
And we gave the Queen, the current Queen, then the Princess-in-Waiting, we gave her an enormous amount of goods and money for her 21st birthday,
yes,
didn't we?
Yes. Although the money, the £300,000, a lot of money then, went for flood relief in Britain after the terrible winter that they'd had. That's how that was.
UCT students going onto the streets of Cape Town with collection boxes to get money for a princess. That's not likely to happen anymore, is it?
No, I doubt it.
Graham, really appreciate your coming in. I'm sorry we didn't have more time to talk, but let me recommend really very, very highly Graham's book, The Last Hurrah, South Africa and the Royal Tour of 1947. Graham Viney, V-I-N-E-Y, but of course you knew that.